Let's circle back to bevacizumab. Oncologists generally in this kind of situation to begin often want to follow very carefully what the trial did. Can you talk about the eligibility and particularly what excluded patients from this study?
Right. The eligibility on the trial, the criteria were relatively straightforward. Patients were not required to have measurable disease. They could have measurable or evaluable disease. They could not have had chemotherapy for metastatic disease. They were allowed to have adjuvant chemotherapy, and about two-thirds of them had had adjuvant chemotherapy. It's not known how many of the patients actually had received an adjuvant taxane, although given when patients were enrolled in the trial and patterns in terms of adjuvant therapy, I think it's reasonable to assume that fewer than half of the patients on the trial had had an adjuvant taxane, and I would bet probably a fair amount less than that. Importantly, patients were excluded if they were on full-dose anticoagulation, if they had any bleeding diathesis, or if they had brain metastases. And while there's an interest in looking at the safety of bevacizumab in women who have previously been treated for brain metastases, at the moment, we don't know if it's a safe agent there.
How about resected brain mets?
I actually don't know if those patients were included or not, but in truth, I think there would have been very, very few patients who would have even been screened, since brain metastases in a first-line setting are pretty uncommon. And I doubt that that came up frequently.
Now, did they require CT of the brains?
They did require screening studies of the brain before going on treatment, and all of the trials with bevacizumab in breast cancer that I'm aware of required a pre-treatment CNS evaluation with a CT or MRI, and I think outside of the study, that's still a requirement.
I got an email from an oncologist asking about his patient with a retinal met that had been radiated.
You know, I don't know that that patient would have been excluded. It's a little hard to know, and I think that that oncologist is just going to have to use his or her best judgment in terms of deciding whether or not to use Avastin.
Now, what about HER2 status in this trial as well as the prior capecitabine trial?
Yeah. So the way the ECOG trial was written is that patients could only go on the trial if they had previously received trastuzumab.
If they were HER2 positive.
And since it's a first-line trial, it means the only way someone could get on it is if they had participated in some study in the adjuvant setting or in the preoperative setting. So right off, that tells you that virtually no one had HER2-positive disease or received prior trastuzumab, and Kathy Miller has told me that essentially no one was on the trial who fit that bill. You know, if there were a couple of patients, I don't think there's anything we can say about it. Now, of course, there's a lot of interest in looking at Avastin in women with HER2-positive disease because of the fact that there are high levels of VEGF expression in patients with HER2-positive disease. But at this point, patients with HER2-positive disease were essentially not treated on that trial. They were treated on the capecitabine trial, and just under a quarter of the patients on the capecitabine trial had HER2-positive disease and prior treatment with trastuzumab.